Good morning, everyone. Today, I would like to share a story. Some of you might have heard it before. And the reason I thought I would share it is because I recently came across different versions of the same story that I had read some years ago. And this morning, we had parrots outside our window. And it is the story of a parrot. Or rather, I think they are actually called parakeets. They are green birds with red beaks. So we have kept some bird feed out for them. And they come. So I will try and mix and match and make a masala of different versions of this story for you. But it drives home a couple of beautiful points. There was a sage who had a disciple with him for more than 10 years. Now the disciple felt he had not yet received full knowledge from his master. And there was this constant complaint inside his head. When will it happen? When will it happen? And a lot of doubts about the master. But he plodded along. There was no one else nearby. No other masters to visit. But he grumbled as he moved along with his master. Now the master was very aware of this predicament as far as the disciple was concerned. But the master knew that the hand of destiny would take its course. So one day, while they were wandering through the forest, they came close to the banks of a river. And the river flowed just outside a town. I think a crow has come to listen to the story. So the river flowed outside the town, and the master told his student that I want to take a bath in the river. Meanwhile, go and beg for some food so that by the time my bath is finished, you can bring some food for us. So please take your begging bowl and go and get us some food because we both are hungry. So this is what happened. While the master took his bath, the disciple went into town and started asking for alms. Please give me food for my master. Please give me food for my master. But it was afternoon. Many people were asleep. And so he did not get a response. But suddenly he heard a voice. Come here, come here. You will get food here. My owner is a very generous woman. And he looked up. And he saw a parrot calling out to him. He said, all right. And the house looked very affluent. So he went, he knocked on the door. The lady of the house opened it and said, what can I do for you? And he said, I've come for some food for my master and myself. So she said, come right in. I will give you some food. And while I prepare more food, which you can take to your master, feel free to sit in this room. Now, traditionally, the disciples would not eat their food before their master ate. This fellow was hungry. He didn't want to wait. So he said, as if my master is going to even know. I'll eat some food here, and when I go back to my master with the food, I'll eat with him some more food. So he was happily eating his meal, and he saw the parrot in a golden cage. And he said, thank you, parrot. It's because you called out to me that I am here and I am getting food for my master and myself. Then he asked the parrot, he said, you are in a golden cage. How come? So the parrot said, oh God, it's quite a strange story. He said, you know, once I was placed near a religious ceremony that was taking place. And the pandit kept saying, Hari ko mile to bandhan toote. Hari ko mile to bandhan toote. When you meet God, your bondages are broken. So the parrot said, I started repeating these words because I thought these are the words of in praise of God. Hari ko mile to bandhan toote. He said, everyone was surprised to see a talking parrot, and that too, a parrot chanting God's name. He said, quickly I was captured and I was put in a cage. And I was shocked. Till then I was freely roaming around. I had a master who never put me in a cage. And now, after chanting God's name, I am in a cage. And he said, I cannot tell you how the situation worsened. Because every time a guest would come to the house, the master would say to me, please recite God's name. And I would say, Hari ko mile to bandhan toote. And as my bad luck would have it, a very affluent person was visiting the house at that time. He paid money for me, took me to his house, and put me in a silver cage. And then my chanting changed. I started saying, Hari ko mile to bandhan toote. Ye jhoot hai. It is a lie. When you meet God, your bondages will be broken. Is a lie. Because that has been my life's experience as this parrot. Because I've gone from a steel cage to now a silver cage. My bondage has become even stranger, you see. And then what happened? Again, my master was fed up with me because I kept adding, is a lie, is a lie. So he sold me to someone else who put me in this golden cage now you find me in. Again, I'm in a cage. So I am very clear, chanting God's name does not break the bondages. Hari ko mile to bandhan toote, jhoot hai. That is my life's experience. So, while he was eating his food, the disciple said, "My God, that is quite a story. It's very unfortunate for you." And so the parrot told this man, he said, "Who is your master?" He said, "Oh, don't ask. He's someone I've been with for more than 10 years, but I don't think it's making any difference to me." Parrot said, "Can you please ask your master one question? I beg of you. Just one question." So the disciple said, "Of course, it is thanks to you that I have come to this house. You called out and said, 'Come, come, we'll give you food.' What is the question?" He said, "I beg you, please ask your master, when will I be free of this cage?" He said, "Oh, that's a simple question. Don't worry. When I go back with the food, I will ask him this. Not to worry. But you are in a golden cage, so I don't know what my master is going to say. But anyway, I'll ask him. Don't worry." So he went back with the food to his master. Now the master knew very well that his disciple was quite satiated because he didn't eat much with the master. But he didn't say anything. Didn't matter. So after the master ate his food, he asked his disciple, "What happened in town today? Did anything happen? Did you learn anything?" He said, "I must tell you something very funny, O master. Nobody responded when I went to beg for alms, but a parrot called out my name." A parrot, can you imagine, called out my name? And then the lady of the house came and gave food for us, which I have brought right to you, and now I'm sharing with you. So, oh, that's quite nice of the parrot to have called out your name. He said, "Yes." He said, "And this parrot asked me a question to ask you. Please don't laugh, but I must ask it because after all, thanks to the parrot, we have got food." So the master said, "Nothing. There's nothing like a stupid question. There's nothing like a silly question. Please ask." So the disciple said, "The parrot said to ask you when he will be free of the cage." And the disciple started laughing. He said, "I wanted to tell this parrot what is my master going to say. He's a couple of miles away and it is up to other forces. But anyway, that is, so I did my duty. I said, I'll ask my master." Now, very strangely, as soon as the master heard it, he went pale, like he was getting a heart attack. And he fell unconscious. And the disciple was shocked. And the first thought of the disciple was, 12 years I would have wasted if my master dies. I better save him. And what has that stupid parrot gone and done? Oh, stupid parrot, I asked a stupid question and this is what has happened. And he ran to the river, got a bucket full of water and kept throwing it onto the master's face to revive him. And suddenly the master opened his eyes, woke up, was sweating profusely. Disciple made the master sit and said, "Master, I'm so happy that you are alive. I'm really sorry, but it seems you had a heart attack of sorts." So the master said, "Don't worry. The unexpected tends to happen. It's okay. I'm okay now. Don't worry." Night came. Next morning came. And once again, they needed food. Once again, the master sent the disciple to the town, and once again, most of the town was asleep, and no one responded to the disciple when he shouted out for alms. And finally, he heard the voice of the parrot, "Come here, come here." He said, "My God, I don't really want to go there after what has happened, but I have no choice. I can't go empty-handed back to my master." So he went into the house. The lady said, "Here's some food for you. Let me prepare some food for your master. And while you are waiting, sit in this room." And he sat in the room. And the minute the lady was out of sight, he looked at the parrot and he said, "You stupid, foolish, idiotic parrot. Thanks to you, I would have lost my master. And all the knowledge I gained for 12 years, which has not fructified, would have gone to waste." The parrot was taken aback. He said, "I'm so sorry. What have I done that has offended you? And what happened to your master? I'm really deeply sorry. I didn't mean anything to happen." He said, "Because of your foolish question, when I asked this question to my master, he almost had a heart attack. He fell down on the floor. He went unconscious." And as the parrot heard this, the parrot was shocked. "My God." And the parrot fell from its perch and gave out a very loud squawk and went lifeless. And the lady of the house came running. "What has happened to my parrot? What has happened to my parrot?" And she went to the cage, she opened it, took the parrot in her hands, the dead, lifeless parrot, and the parrot flew out from her hands. And the parrot told the disciple, "You stupid fool, what kind of a disciple are you? You've been complaining for 12 years that your master doesn't show you the way. And all I needed to do is to follow his actions. And I just followed his actions and I dropped dead as if I was having a heart attack, and I am free from this cage. Who is the bigger fool?" And then, when the parrot was free, everyone went to listen to this talking parrot, which would be on a tree outside the town. And what was this parrot chanting? "Guru ko mile to bandhan toote." It is when you meet the Guru that the bondages are broken. The Guru shows you the way. That was the parrot's experience. This master of masters, all he had to hear was the parrot's cry for help. "What do I do to get out of this cage?" And as soon as the master grasped that, he pretended to fall down and have a stroke. And the parrot, being so wise, picked up on that and emulated the master and was free of the cage. He did not ask the disciple, "What is the meaning of that? Can you explain to me? If this means this, that means that." He just followed what the master did. The Guru is God in human form. We are in human form. It is the human form of the Guru that shows us the way through the journey of life. Chanting God's name is all very well. Look at what happened to the parrot. Hari se mile to bandhan toote jhoot hai. It is a lie because he was in a cage after cage after cage. It is the Guru who set the parrot free. Let me read out 3 or 4 lines which Osho says on this subject. Grace happens in the dimension of love. For love, everything is always eternally present. So if you are in love, grace can happen. This is not the dualistic love he's talking about. He's talking about divine love. But love is surrendering. Love means now the other has become more important than yourself. Now for the other's life, you are ready to die. The other has become the center. You are just the periphery. By and by, you disappear completely. And the other remains. In that right moment, grace is received. So do not think of a master as one who can give you grace. Think of becoming a helpless disciple, totally surrendered in love. The master will come to you. When the disciple is ready, the master always comes. It is not a question of physical presence. When you are ready, from an unknown dimension of love, grace happens. Grace happens. All right, that story took time to narrate. I hope it wasn't boring for y'all. We can begin taking some questions or if there's anything anyone would like to share. I'm going to look at that now. Yesterday, there was a talk with the Spanish audience, which was translated into Spanish. And I was reminded of an artist whom I followed quite closely in my teenage years. It was a Spanish artist called Salvador Dali. And one statement he had made had really tickled me. He had said, "The only difference between me and a madman is that I am not mad." The only difference between me and a madman is that I am not mad. And I think he was talking on behalf of all of us. I quite like the example which Eckhart Tolle had used of someone walking on the footpath who's jabbering away to themselves. And he says, that's what most of us do, but our jabbering is inside our mind, constantly thinking. This fellow is at least saying it out and doesn't care about others. Ours is covert. Our madness is a madness based on doership, which is spinning wheels upon wheels in our heads. That has become our mantra. All this thinking based on doership which we carry around, the thinking mind of the ego, is the chanting going on in our heads, which takes us into a dead past of what people did to us or what the world did to us, or it takes us into an imaginary future of what might happen, what could happen. That is why he said, to recognize the insanity in one's mind is the first step to sanity. So true. Many of us are lost in this dream. We don't even realize we are suffering or thinking. The first step is to be aware that one is suffering the thinking. A few years ago, someone young had come to me and said, I understand everything that you say. I've listened to all of Rameshji's videos. I've read all of Maharaj's books. But please, please, please give me a technique. And he would not leave my home. And I didn't know what technique to give him, you know. I said, there are so many techniques available. You know, why don't you pick one from what is out there? He said, no, 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 I want a technique. I said, all right. I started wondering what to say. And then I said, do you agree with me that when you wake up, your dreams are over? He said, what kind of a question is that? Obviously, when I wake up, all my dreams have vanished. I said, okay, I just want your agreement on this basic point. I said, do you agree with me that in deep sleep, all that happened to you during the day is forgotten? He said, this is another trick question you're asking. Obviously, if I'm in deep sleep, I've forgotten what happened in the day. I said, no, I just want your agreement on these basic principles so we are on the same page. He said, all right. I said, in the day, if anything happens that disturbs you, immediately let this thought come. This is the living dream of life. And he quickly wrote it down. He did not ask me, what is the meaning of this? What will happen to me if I put this thought? Nothing. He wrote it down. This is the living dream of life. And then after perhaps 6 months, I got an email from him. He said whenever he was getting disturbed by what someone said at work, especially at work, he had a lot of grievances regarding his work. He said if he received a mail from his colleagues which upset him, and his immediate reaction is to counter email his ire. He said what happened was, as soon as something would come to me which upset me, I would take a deep breath and say, this is the living dream of life. And he said, I would wait, I would take a couple of deep breaths more. And then that reaction, he said, got delayed. After an hour or so, I would do other things. And then I would reply to the email. And I found my language started changing in my replies. He said, with anything that used to upset me, this became my mantra. This is the living dream of life. You see, it is not the words. See the yearning, see the intent. No doubting, no questioning. And in his case, it transformed him. Even with his family members, if they upset him, the same thing would happen. Then I told him, now that the transformation is happening, Don't go and go on and on and on and on telling yourself this is the living dream of life, because the knowing is already there. Otherwise, what happens? You hold on to another concept. And that is why Ramana Maharshi said that the first thorn which is in the foot, to remove that, you take a second thorn and then you throw both out of the window. I think it was some Zen master who said, this is the living dream of life and we will wake up when we are dead. All right. Yes, Umayal.
Yes, Namaste. I am Uma. Uma, you can call me Uma as well. I am from Chennai.
Sorry, Umayal, I am again not able to hear you. I know that last weekend you two came on the line, but I really don't know. Divya or Sangeeta or Rajesh, can someone help Umayal with her recording? Because it would be very nice to talk to her, but I can't hear her much.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you faintly.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Now can you hear me, sir?
Better.
Better?
Yes.
Okay, sir. This is about not any questions about in Advaita. First, I must say thank you for all the teachings. It's about a curiosity about a person, an astrologer, 23 years before I met him. Now, is it my audio? Is audible, sir, my voices?
Divya, can you tell us whether everyone can hear Umayal? I can hear her faintly, but I can hear her.
Can you hear? Can I proceed?
Yes, please.
Yeah, this is about a person who I met 23 years before, sir.
Right.
He's very curiosity for me because he was an astrologer.
Understood.
And about my husband property, I met him 23 years before and he said, I have to go to the family deity temple. We call it in Tamil Kula Deva.
The family deity.
Yeah, family deity. That he insists me by looking at my horoscope, only that he has explained where the temple will be there. Till such time, I don't know where the temple and no one knows about it. My brothers as well.
Uh-huh.
And he said, this is the area I think you have to go at your father's expense, not your expense.
Uh-huh.
So your father has to take him and go with your children. And you come back to me whenever you, after you visited, you come back and tell me. Then he said, I will tell you. Then it was after 2 months, I met him again. After visited the temple with my parents' expenditure, my children, not my son, my daughter, of course. And then 2 months after I met him, first question he asked me, three incidents he asked me, which was really shocked. Three incidents, he asked me whether this has happened, whether that has happened, whether this has happened. Then we recollected. I said, yes, all this has happened. Then first thing he said, this is a God who will protect you. You pray for this, you know, bridging the wall. Then this, that's enough. Then I got my property, my husband's property, settled down and everything. How can a person say like that? This is a curiosity which I wanted to ask you, sir.
Why not, Umayal? Anything is possible because everything is God's will. How can anything be excluded from that? It is your good fortune that you met an astrologer who was so exacting in his science and that it happened for you. It is part of the hand of destiny.
Okay.
Because some people are gifted with divine vision
okay.
through the science of astrology. So why not?
Okay. Okay, sir.
Yes.
Thank you, sir. Thank you so much.
This reminds me of, it was again, I had read a bit of Osho during this lockdown. So I can't recall whether I read it in his books or where, but it's about couple going to an astrologer with their child's horoscope. And the astrologer looked at it and said, oh God, I will only read this horoscope after the child turns 7. Only when the child turns 7, you come back to me. Otherwise, I don't see this child turning 7. And the child turned 7, and when they went back to the astrologer, they found out he had died. You see, the astrologer thought he is around for 7 years. And he was so confident that, oh, come back to me after 7 years. So it's God's will. Whatever happens is God's will.
Is it true one person can say like that, sir?
Why not? Why not? That is the beauty of life. All right. Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, Sumi.
Hi, Gautam.
Hello.
Good morning.
Morning, morning.
Yes. I just wanted to share with you, like last week when I talked to you, something shifted in me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was since then, every time, I mean, I haven't felt, I have so much in peace right now. And there was no altercation. I mean, I did not fall into any altercation. I could, if anywhere there was a trace of anger, I was aware of it right away. And I reflected on that, and I did not respond to that anger. And something changed. I don't know what it is. I can't explain it. But definitely there was a change and a shift. And I think it was whatever I talked to you about. And like you said about the parrot, something happened. And your words brought the teaching from my head to my heart. I think that kind of dropped. And I wanted to thank you for that. And I really appreciate it. And I have a question. After the story, you said something about love and grace was there. So if the grace happens, the love have to happen too, right?
Yes.
You cannot cultivate that love.
No.
That kind of love cannot be cultivated. It's not a human love. It's a divine love.
Yes.
So it has to happen. And in order, the grace makes the love happen too.
Yes. But there's a point here to take note of. You see, everyone has it. We are all born from the source. We are all fragments of the source, you could say, or use whatever terminology you like. What tends to happen for most of us, all our journeys are a journey of suffering and loss. It is suffering and loss which brings us onto the spiritual path. Now, when some people come onto that path, a kind of surrender happens, because the knowing that things are not in my control, that thy will be done, that knowing which you garnered through the suffering, through the loss, that there's a higher power, creates that surrender, you see. So you are right in saying that even that has to happen. The point is that it is everyone's foundation, but when it happens to whom is a matter of destiny. But for everyone, it must happen. Because the fragmentation of consciousness takes place for consciousness to know itself, because it has got fragmented. Shiva has become Shiva Shakti, and it has to come back. That is the journey, you see. So that is everyone's journey. And at some point or the other, depending on their destiny, God's will, grace, it will happen. That is destiny. So it is not that anyone will be left out from this. That is the point I would like to make.
And interestingly, that you talked about love today. Last couple of days, all of a sudden, I have come across Amma. You know, India, Amma, the Karunamayi, who is from Kerala. The hugging saint?
Hugging Amma. Mata Amritanandamayi.
Yes. Who hugs and she is all about love. She is the divine mother, all about love. So I have been listening to her last few couple of days, and she talks so much about love, and you talked about love, and it was like something is resonating with love right now. So I'm just interesting how things are like connected.
These signs and symbols and coincidences.
Yes, because I have heard about her, but I never listened to her. But all of a sudden I came across and I heard, I'm listening to her last couple of days, and it's very, very profound.
I have not read much and listened to much, but I did get a hug because when she was in Bombay, and most of, when she would come to Bombay at Rameshji's place, suddenly there was an influx of people, foreigners and all, because they were perhaps not only accompanying her, but also coming to Bombay for her darshan. And so they would come to Rameshji because, you know, the spiritual circle is quite small. You know who's who in the zoo. So then I said, if everyone's going, I must go. And this was in an area called Shivaji Park. So I had dinner with some friends. I left them at about 11 p.m. And I went there, and I was quite fascinated to see how organized the darshan was, because you get a token and then you can just mull around, relax, wait till your number is displayed, and you go for the hug. So that was my experience. I think I got my hug at 5:30 a.m. But it was quite fun, you know. That is, I must add here that we recently published a book, as I have mentioned, on Anandamayi Ma, the great saint Anandamayi Ma.
Yeah.
And we were quite keen on getting today's spiritual luminaries to write reviews on this master and on the book, because it is a very special book of her devotee's experience with her master. And Amma was one of the first to send a review. It was very beautiful. So I just wanted to share that Amma has given a review for that book. And you know, it's very strange how these things are. When we were working on a book on Nisargadatta Maharaj, a tribute, Nisargadatta Maharaj, a tribute, it was just quotations of Maharaj and color photographs of Maharaj, just beautifully presented so that anyone who's, you know, a kind of devotee of Maharaj and would like or value such a book would cherish it. So with that in mind, the approach of my team was the same. When it was ready, we sent it out to get Advaita teachers and all to write reviews on this great master and whatever they felt like. It was quite an open brief. And all but one master in the West, he refused to give the review, which I appreciated because that's how he felt. But I asked him, I said, is there a reason? And he said, yes, you see, Maharaj gave a teaching. And I don't believe in giving teachings. I don't believe in teaching, so I'm not in agreement with it. And that's what I tell everyone who comes to me. I don't believe in teachings. I said, fair enough. Thank you for explaining, and no harm done. And we ended the conversation. But what thought arose in my mind is, isn't that itself a teaching, to say that you have no teaching? Isn't that also a concept? Concepts have to be used. So to say that I don't have a concept is a concept. But of course, that was again my thinking, so I didn't want to get into that. But mostly, it is so beautiful to see how, at least in India, the spiritual community of sadhus, gurus, many of them have always come spontaneously forward to offer, not only to offer their views and reviews, but even to share the book with their community. A couple of them refused to do reviews also. So We see the aspects of duality even in the spiritual world. Nothing is exempt from it, you see. So I'm glad that the words have impacted you, Sumi. And what has actually happened is the silence behind the words. And may you keep receiving the grace.
Thank you. Okay. I want to thank you.
Take care. Yes, Holger.
Thank you, Gautam. It's here short before 11 o'clock in California in the night. And for some reason, my little family is not at home, so I have some time to speak and to be loud. And I also got a hug once from Amma. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to thank you for this beautiful satsang and your humor and your wisdom and your delight. I mean, it's quite uplifting and encouraging. And I just want to thank you for this. It's amazing.
Thank you. Thank you. And are you going to now be even louder now that your neighbors aren't there? Are you up to some mischief?
No, not at all. I mean, I'm not interested. I just, because we have such a small space, if I would talk, they sleep already, then this would be just disturbing.
Okay. That's
all. Okay. It's just, I'm so grateful for all those teachings and for Roger Castillo and for Rupert Spira. And there's so many amazing people that are available on YouTube. And it's just such a gift to open up and to feel some more space inside.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I would say that, you know, this is the upside of technology. Thanks to it, today all this access is there. I mean, you know, in the distant times when people like Buddha and Jesus were there, there were no YouTube videos, and the only way to access them was to go and meet them, which must have been so difficult in those times. So truly, I think it would be beautiful if these opportunities are really accessed by people, but then that is also a matter of destiny.
There's a thing, I'm not so much in favor of Facebook, for example, when there are too many people. I have this idea of having more like a more cozy private community of people who are interested in, for example, in Advaita or just in love.
Right.
And but there I'm kind of struggling with my own motivation if I should push something or if I just wait to let things unfold. I mean, there I'm kind of
you know, I'll tell you something quite funny. I met a very remarkable man in a town, I think the town was called Torquay or Torquay. This is in England. And we met in a bigger town called Exeter. And he was a very gifted man. He is a very gifted man. Must be in his early 80s now. And he has the gift of clairvoyance. And he came and we met. We had a great session. And he said, look, he said, there are two kinds of people. He says, they are like you and like me. He said, the difference is, if there is a small pond and we are walking across the pond and we see something, he said, my nature is, I jump into the pond, I'm excited and all that happens. And he says, your nature is, you look at the pond and you say, is it really worth all that? And then you walk on. So you see, my nature has been that I, even at work, allow things to happen. You know, and sometimes I find surprisingly that there is motivation, because you use that word, that motivation to move things in a certain direction. So when that is there, even that is on. So it is a kind of mix and match, you see, because deep down, there is a knowing. And what tends to happen is the mind creates the doubt. So if there's something which one feels like doing from the heart, to use words, sometimes it's very difficult to not allow the mind to come in. So that inner knowing is there, and that needs to be trusted as well. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
One question I just have right now about the heart. This is just one thing. Isn't it an object in and of itself? I mean, I really appreciate when I feel more alive, when I can feel my chest, when it gets warm. But this, again, is just an appearance, an object.
How can it be an object? Because the heart is actually the heart of consciousness, which is not an object. It cannot be an object.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes, Nishanti.
Hello, Gautam.
Hello.
Thank you for taking this question again. It's funny that I forget his name, but the person before me has been asking about heart and love. We're talking about that, it seems like, today. My question is, Ramana Maharshi talks about spiritual heart. And I'm wondering, is that, I'm thinking that it's the same as heart chakra. Is that, am I on the right path on this? And if you could talk a little bit more about that, that would be wonderful. Also, can one feel it physically if that chakra is open? Or can one feel it? Yeah, that's what I'm getting at, I guess.
Okay, so... Please. I am not an expert on this, but the heart chakra is different from the spiritual heart on the right of the chest.
Okay.
The heart chakra is, and I don't want to bother people who are on this talk because many of them are not into this subject, but the heart chakra is the bridge between the higher chakras and the lower chakras, because after all, it is here. Then comes the throat, then comes the third eye, and then comes the sahasrara. So the heart is the bridge where we cross from the mundane to the subtle. And this, the heart becomes the center in that sense. When we say we are operating from the heart center, is the heart chakra. And the heart chakra's vibrations are wings. That is why you see angels with wings, because it's a vibration. It's not that angels have wings. It's symbolic, you see. Now, the spiritual heart being on the right side of the chest is the first point where consciousness fragments and settles in the fetus. Now, I am no expert on this, but coincidentally, my mother has done 3 videos. The first 2 are called Ramana Maharshi and the Spiritual Heart. And the 3rd video was just uploaded yesterday, which is the Spiritual Heart Part 3, because she had the experience of the spiritual heart in the right side of the chest. So if you go on to YouTube and type Santosh Sachdeva, the spiritual heart, you will find these videos there. And if you have any questions on that, you could direct them to her. But one very important thing, and I'm so glad that you have raised this question, is this teaching has a direct impact on the heart chakra. And hopefully, for those who are interested in this subject, one can go deeper, perhaps in a separate session, into the chakras which get unblocked and opened as a direct result of the impact of this teaching. And the heart chakra is playing a very crucial role. Even more important is the Manipur and the third eye, which is the eye of knowledge, because you are no longer operating from the eyes of duality, but the eye of singularity. If you know that everything is consciousness and all there is consciousness, you are operating from the eye of singularity, because the distinctions, the separations start diminishing and dissolving. So they are all connected. The third eye, the heart, and the manipur, the navel. Your first contact and disconnect when you come into being, when the navel cord is cut, the navel plays a very big role. Why do you think Ganpati has such a big belly? Because he eats a lot. No. It is the prana shakti which is stored in the belly. There was a master outside Bombay called Nityananda of Ganeshpuri. He hardly ate and his belly was huge. It was full of prana, life force, the power, you see. So there's a reason behind these symbolic aspects of deities and gods and the trunk of Ganesha. There are reasons for that. Why are Indian gods depicted on lotuses? The lotus is symbolic of a vibration. That pattern is a pattern of a vibration. And for us common people, the rishis knew we were too thick-skinned to understand all this. So they placed the god on a lotus. So we are imbibing the symbolism unconsciously, the vibration unconsciously. That is how great spiritual heritage is. It's fabulous. Even Christian heritage, like Archangel Michael being the I Am, the Son. It's tremendous symbolism in that, but that has got lost. That has got lost. So that's it for now. Okay?
Thank you.
Yes, Purnu.
Yes, good morning. Good
morning.
I would really like to thank you for all these talk sessions. And today while logging in, I was just going through the schedule and looking at August sessions and the September one. I feel very happy that this will go on for a while. And I would just like to share this, like, even when I felt that I do not understand all the words so completely, like, there was this transformation or a transmission happening beyond the words. Like today you mentioned a silence that is being transmitted beneath these words. And I think that has played the major role, because I never get into the concepts really, or never understand them.
You know, Purnoor, I've always been a very quiet person. Even in school, if you ask some of my school friends like Ananda, I barely said a word. So people are surprised how I talk so much in satsang. And the answer is quite simple. It happens. When it's meant to happen, it happens, you know. And what is meant to come out, comes out. I keep getting asked that, do you prepare for these talks in the morning or the day before? And not really, because then that would mean the talking is happening from the mind. What is the point of that? So it must be spontaneous. Even I don't know what's going to come out, you see. It's really quite a mystery to me. And it's sometimes when people tell me, you said this, I say, is that so? It's a very mysterious process. But it feels very natural. You see, to have to take notes and think and wonder what to speak about, that would not seem natural at all. Because when people ask questions, they don't need a clever mind to answer them. They are asking questions from the source. You see, so this is a very important process which takes place to understand. Because even when someone asks a question, it is not only the question that is being heard. It is all that is behind the question that is being heard, you see. So even that question itself is quite insignificant. Sometimes people feel that they've asked one question and got a different answer. No. They have got the answer meant for them. That is it. But you have a beautiful smile, and that's quite nice to see.
Thank you. Thank you for
which part of India are you in?
I'm in Lucknow right now.
Lucknow. Okay. Okay, Purnu.
Thank you.
I believe you're helping us with some of the transcripts or something. Is it so?
Yes.
Thank you.
Recently volunteered for that. It is helping me, actually. Thank you.
Yes, that's how I felt, you know, when I would work on Rameshji's books. I had the opportunity to interact with him, go to his house, share a cup of tea with him. And there's so much more I learned thanks to this beautiful teaching, you know, because that opportunity was given to me. So that's how it works. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. So I think we have, that's all we have for now. And it's quite interesting and mysterious, this whole process. Words can rarely do justice to it. In my younger days, there was a song called Words. I forget the artist's name. Words don't come easy to me. And I used to feel that this man was singing this song about me, you know. And then I met a master who said, forget the words. As long as you feel something, even if you don't express it, it's quite fine. And he said, I know people force you, force me means force anyone. You must express yourself, don't do this, don't do that, don't hold back. You must say this, you must say that, you must. No. He said, God is not concerned with whether you express yourself or not. It is what you feel within. What is carried in the heart. The rest is all shoulds, shouldn'ts. How will someone else know what you feel if you don't tell them? They will know. If they are meant to know, they will know. Actions speak louder than words indeed. Actions speak louder than words indeed. And non-action speaks even louder than action and words. And that is why when someone asked Ramana Maharshi, look at you sitting so comfortably on your couch saying nothing when all of us are doing things for helping people and so on. And Ramana said, what makes you think nothing is happening here? On what grounds do you say it? Because you see no action happening? And that silence, that stillness is always there. It is with you in your deep sleep. It is in the waking state between two thoughts, between the in-breath and the out-breath. It is there. But we are scared of it. Who is scared of the silence? The thinking mind of the ego, because it is worried, I will not survive. With the silence, I am dead. I don't want to die. I better latch on to objects. I better latch on to people. And I better latch on to thoughts and create this identity for myself so I can survive. In silence, I will die. I don't want to die. This does not mean the silence is not there. The silence is waiting. Waiting for you to die to it. watching from the corner. And that is why, I forget which book this was in, of Nisargadatta Maharaj, he told one doctor who was quite intellectual, after the doctor finished what he had to say, Maharaj said, "When you were born, I was watching your birth from the corner. Silence can never leave you. You can leave the silence, you who thinks you are separate. Identity founded on the principle of doership, walk away from the silence in that sense. With all your judgments, opinions, jealousies and envies, accusations and condemnations, and all the games that the thinking mind of the ego starts playing, getting lost in this grand illusion of life, blaming others for their destinies, blaming themselves, blaming God. Can you really blame silence for anything? To blame consciousness means we have created an object out of consciousness. I have seen people do it. They blame God for their destinies. You did this to me. What have I done to deserve this? Who is asking the question? An object in manifestation is questioning the source. The painting is asking the painter, why did you create me? How could you draw me like that? How could you use these colors? That is the Maya. And that is why Sindharameshwar Maharaj said, Maya is me. Simple, three words. Maya is me. That me became me and mine. And the basic duality of life, me and the other, became me versus the other. Then what happens? A teaching comes along, any teaching which resonates with you, a teacher comes along and heals back the me versus the other to the me and the other, and the me and the other to the me, and the me is healed back to the silence. And the silence is death. Not death as something to be feared. Silence as death of the me. With its sense of doership. That is why this teaching, I call it slow poison for the thinking mind of the ego. It transforms and transforms till the thinking mind is completely annihilated. And what remains is pure being. And when the working mind needs to be engaged, it is engaged. But now you know, whatever happens, the results are not in my control. Thinking mind is gone. All I can do is what I decide to do in a particular situation. Thinking mind is gone. When activity is meant to happen, it happens. When it is not meant to happen, one rests in being. Either way, it is a silent mind. The one who is afraid of death, that one is gradually dissolving. So what all can one die to today? Why not try it? Die to an opinion you have, your precious opinion. Die to a judgment. Who cares? what someone says to me, what I feel about it, die to that? Does it really matter? Let others be how God made them. Die to your version of what they should be. Die to your version of what you should be. Forget ourselves. We make lives miserable for others by our opinions and judgments and telling them what to do and what not to do. Behave this way, don't behave that way. The Sufi mystic Mansur al-Halaj, reached the highest state of consciousness, you could say. And he ran out on the streets and said, Analhaq, I am the truth, I am the truth. What happened to him? They killed him. All he was doing out of ecstasy and joy was talking about his own experience. Whatever we don't agree with, we condemn. Giordano Bruno said that all the stars in the sky are like suns. And he claimed that the earth beneath our feet actually moves. He was condemned. Who was speaking the truth at that time? Whatever we don't disagree with, we crucify. Don't agree with, sorry. Or it goes unrecognized. A great teaching. Talking about actions speak louder than words. I am reminded of my mentor in Kashmir, as I might have said before. He has this habit of feeding birds wherever he goes. All I can offer this man is some money, you see, when I meet him. I can't offer him anything else. So on one of the trips, I gave him again an envelope with money. And next day he said, come. And we went to a very big mosque in the area. And outside the mosque was a shop selling bird feed. So he told me and my brother-in-law that you just buy some bird feed. And what happened was people recognized him. So they were coming up to offer their respects. He is known by the name Badshah. Badshah means emperor. So everyone greets him Badshah. All the beggars, all the people who are outside around the mosque. So I went to the shop and I told my brother-in-law, now, how much do we buy of bird feed to carry? So we used our own logic and thinking minds. My brother-in-law is a lawyer. And we figured out we'd carry one bundle for himself, one for myself, small things which we could carry in the hand. And we went to Baba. And he looked at us. He said, what are you doing? I said, you said to get the bird feed. So we got the bird feed. He said, you have to buy the whole sack. So I said, why? He said, because you gave me that much money, so you buy the whole sack. So I said, how will we carry it? You see, this is how the mind comes into play. He said, you don't worry about that. And suddenly some helpers came and we were really struggling to carry bucketfuls of bird feed. And outside the mosque, they have this huge area where the pigeons come. Many of us in India would have seen this, you know, pigeons coming to feed. And so then we started really tossing the bird feed. It took us perhaps half an hour because there was so much bird feed to just left, right. It was a huge open space. And then when we finish that, after feeding the birds, which is apparently of deep significance, which I didn't know, when we were in the car on our way back, I told him, I said, Baba, you know, all these people who come up to you and greet you and take your blessing, it's so touching to see. And they call you emperor, Badshah. He said, no. He said, they want something from me. Be it some healing herbs, be it a blessing, whatever. No. My heart is with them. I said, who then? He said, the birds. I said, why? He said, because I do know one thing. When I die, when my coffin is taken from my home to the burial place, I will not know the intentions of those who come for my funeral. Is it true love that motivates them? Or something else? But what I do know for sure is when my coffin leaves my home, all these birds will be hovering above and accompanying it till my burial. That I do know. And they haven't mentioned a word to me, but I know it. That is a relationship of true love.